Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Village Farm International Third Quarter 2017 Financial Results Conference Call. This morning, Village Farms issued a news release reporting its financial results for third quarter ended September 30, 2017. That news release, along with the company's financial statements, are available on SEDAR and on the company's website at villagefarms.com under the Investor heading. Please note that today's call is being broadcast live over the Internet and will be archived for a replay both by telephone and via the Internet beginning approximately 1 hour following completion of the call. Details of how to access the replay are available in yesterday's news release. Before we begin, let me remind you that forward-looking statements may be made today, during, or after the formal part of this conference call. Certain material assumptions were applied in providing these statements, many of which are beyond our control. These statements are subject to a number of risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results to differ materially from those expressed or implied in forward-looking statements. A summary of those underlying assumptions, risks, and uncertainties is contained in various securities filings, including Village Farms' current annual information form for the year ending December 31, 2016, and MD&A for the quarter ending September 30, 2017, and the press release issued by Village Farms and Emerald announcing the joint venture, all of which are made on SEDAR. These forward-looking statements are made as of today's date, and except as required by applicable securities law, we undertake no obligation to publicly update or revise any such statements. I would now like to turn the call over to Michael DeGiglio, Chief Executive Officer of Village Farms International. Please go ahead, Mr. DeGiglio.
Thanks, Christine, and thank you to everyone on the phone line and listening in on the Internet for joining us today. With me for today's call is Village Farms Chief Financial Officer Stephen Ruffini. In terms of the agenda for today's call, I'll begin with a review of the operational highlights for the third quarter, including significant progress of Pure Sun Farms, our joint venture with Emerald Health Therapeutics, for large-scale, high-quality, low-cost cannabis production in Canada. Steve will then review our third quarter financial results, and I'll return for some concluding comments before Steve and I take your questions. So let me begin with the cannabis joint venture Pure Sun Farms, which I am pleased to report is rapidly progressing towards commercial production at the existing state-of-the-art 1.1 million square foot greenhouse facility in Delta, British Columbia, which we refer to as the Delta 3 greenhouse. Our target is to be growing for commercial purposes in the spring of next year and will be ready to sell on or before July 1st. Of course, these timelines are always subject to receipt of the required licenses from Health Canada. And as I'll discuss in a moment, we are very encouraged by our progress here as well. As a reminder, or for those that are somewhat new to Village Farm's story, seizing on what we believe to be a transformational opportunity, in June of this year, following discussions with a number of licensed producers, we formed a joint venture with Emerald Health Therapeutics for high-quality, high-volume, low-cost cannabis production. Under our agreement, Village Farms has initially contributed one of our 1.1 million square foot Delta, or our 1.1 million square foot Delta 3 greenhouse facility, and Emerald is initially contributing $20 million in cash to fund the conversion of the Delta 3 facility to cannabis production. Pure Sun Farms has also the option to purchase from Village Farms the other two existing operationally state-of-the-art greenhouse facilities in Delta, which we call Delta 2 and Delta 1 facilities, at which time Emerald would be required to provide funding for the conversion of those facilities to cannabis, which respectively would add another 1.1 million and 2.6 million square feet for a total potential growing area of nearly 5 million square feet. We are conservatively forecasting annual output of at least 75,000 kilograms of dried cannabis for the 1.1 million square foot Delta 3 facility and at least 300,000 kilograms, again conservatively, if Pure Sun Farms was to exercise its option and expand to the entire almost 5 million square feet. The 1.1 million square foot or 75,000 kilos of production alone would make Pure Sun Farms one of the largest cannabis producers in Canada and the world. Pure Sun Farms achieved several critical milestones during and subsequent to the end of the third quarter. Perhaps most importantly, as per the timeline we had previously committed to, on September 14th, the cultivation license application for the Delta 3 facility, we submitted it to Health Canada. Just two business days later, we were informed that the application was accepted for review. As I mentioned earlier, we are very encouraged by this process, which is a testament to both the experience of the development team, the meticulous preparation, and Emerald's excellent track record of compliance with Health Canada. The application is for a second site cultivation license, which leverages Emerald's existing cultivation license, and to which Health Canada gives and confers priority relative to the first-time license application. This is one of the reasons we chose to partner with an experienced license producer. The other top priority for Pure Sun Farms is the conversion of the Delta 3 greenhouse for cannabis production. During the third quarter, we finalized all of the conversion plans for the Delta 3 greenhouse, and following acceptance of the license application, immediately began to move forward in earnest. Our plan is to convert the total 1.1 million square feet in four roughly equally sized phases. Phases conversions will expedite the overall process, enable us to begin growing and begin generating cash flow much sooner than converting the entire facility all at once. We, like many experts, believe the Canadian market will be short of supply should the federal government follow through with legalization of cannabis for recreational use, cannabis, on July 1st. And we are determined to be ready with product to sell at that time. Physical conversion of the first quadrant is now well underway. All of the security equipment, the growing systems have been ordered, and the first vault is scheduled for installation in January. Each quadrant will be composed of multiple grow rooms such that Pure Sun Farms can continually harvesting product throughout the year with the flexibility to grow shorter and longer cycle crops to enable us to strategically tailor our output to customer and market demands. Stand by one second. We expect conversion of the first quadrant of the Delta 3 facility to be completed, which essentially means that it will be ready for inspection by Health Canada in February, just 3 months from now. We will overlap the conversion schedules of each quadrant for expediency and plan to start the second quadrant this coming February with a target to have it commercially growing in the beginning of the fall. We expect the entire 1.1 million square foot greenhouse to be operational in the fourth quarter 2019. All of this puts us on track to achieve our targeted full output of at least 75,000 kilograms of production on an annualized basis, again, a conservative estimate, in 2020. We plan to install supplemental lighting throughout the entire Delta 3 facility to maximize yields and have secured the required 24 megawatts of power on favorable terms. Pure Sun Farms has made tremendous progress in less than 6 months since our announcement to enter the cannabis space. Our people are working flat out to ensure that we are ready for July 1st, and I would like to take this opportunity to publicly acknowledge all of the staff across both of our organizations whose tireless efforts have gotten us so far so fast. In our incumbent produce business, which I want to remind everyone is reported entirely in U.S. dollars, we delivered improved performance for the third quarter. Revenues increased 6% year over year, EBITDA grew 78%, and net income was positive. Although the end of Q3 as well as the beginning of Q4 were impacted by unseasonably warm end of summer, start of autumn in the northern United States and Canada, we continue to benefit from our success in lowering our cost of production at our company facilities. In fact, cost per pound at our facilities was 6% lower in Q3 of this year over Q3 of last year, and is 3% lower for the year-to-date numbers. This marks our sixth quarter of improvement out of the last seven. As I'll discuss in a few minutes, large-scale, low-cost growing is in our DNA, and we will be at a significant advantage as Pure Sun Farms ramps up its cannabis growing operations. We continue to focus on maximizing our margin through exclusive high-margin tomato varieties and continue to be successful in this regard. I'm also pleased to report that Village Farms' own Laura Bella Blossom variety, which we launched this past October, was just named as one of the 10 finalists in the inaugural annual Innovation Award sponsored by Produce Business, a leading industry trade publication. Amidst ongoing pricing pressure on our commoditized varieties, I am proud of this performance, especially in the context of considerable use of both human and certain financial resources in advancing the conversion of Pure Sun Farms Delta 3 greenhouse operations cannabis production over the last 5 months. I'd like now to turn the call over to Steve to walk through the third quarter results. Steve?
Thanks, Mike. In the interest of time, I'm going to confine my remarks to key metrics for the third quarter. Our complete quarter and year-to-date financial results and discussion are available on our MD&A and financial statements, which were posted earlier today on SEDAR as well as on our website. I'm happy to go into more detail during the Q&A, or if you want to call me afterwards, that's fine as well. I also like to remind you that all our reported numbers are in U.S. dollars. That is our common currency in our produce business. So for the benefit of a lot of our Canadian investors, I'll give Canadian equivalents on my remarks. As Mike just discussed, our produce business had a good third quarter. Sales grew 6% to U.S. dollar 44.7 million or Canadian dollar 56.3 million from U.S. dollar 42 million or Canadian dollar 53.2 million for the third quarter of last year, driven by higher volumes from the company's facilities on slightly lower tomato pricing. Overall, our cost of sales for Q3 increased 5% to 42.4 million U.S. or 53.7 Canadian from 40.3 million U.S. or 51 Canadian in the same period last year, primarily due to higher volumes at the company's own facilities. However, cost per pound of the company's facilities decreased 6%. Again, our sixth quarter of improved operating results in the last seven as we continue to have success in our focus on cost of production, and a lot of that comes out of our continual improvements with respect to our exclusive varieties, which we continue to improve yields and lower our cost on. Selling in general and administrative expenses for Q3 were essentially unchanged for the same period last year at 3.4 million or 4.3 million Canadian, which again includes back office support for the new venture, both on the development team as well as the back office with accounting and other support until that venture stands on its own 2 feet sometime in 2018. We've reported net income for the third quarter of 2017 of roughly 300,000 U.S. or 400,000 Canadian, which is equivalent to a U.S. penny per share, an improvement of 1.7 million U.S. or 2.2 million Canadian from a net loss in the third quarter of last year of 1.4 million U.S. or 1.8 million Canadian. EBITDA was just shy of U.S. 1 million or slightly above Canadian 1.2 million for the quarter, up 78% from just over $500,000 U.S. dollars in the Q3 of last year. The improvements in both net income and EBITDA were primarily a result of improved operating results in Q3 of 2017 versus Q3 of 2016. And with that, I will turn the call back over to Mike.
Thanks, Steve. So looking ahead, our diversification into cannabis production through our Pure Sun Farms joint venture is a tremendous opportunity for our company, one that allows us to deploy existing state-of-the-art greenhouse assets and decades of proven operating capabilities to a significantly more profitable agricultural product. The market opportunity is forecast to be massive, and we are very well positioned to capitalize on it. In fact, again, using conservative market price and yield estimates, with just the 1.1 million square foot Delta 3 facility, which represented approximately 10% of our total footprint prior to the joint venture, Pure Sun's Farms will generate more revenue than the entire produce business did, and at a significantly greater EBITDA margins of greater than 50%. At Village Farms, we have been growing agricultural products in greenhouses on a large-scale, low-cost basis for 30 years. Our growing team has more than 750 years of combined experience We have successfully grown everything from tomatoes to chrysanthemums to roses, cucumbers, peppers, herbs, and so on. Cannabis is another agricultural product for us. It is unique, but no more or less unique than any other crop we've grown. And we've done so with industry-leading quality and at industry-leading costs in many, many countries in the world. Like all other agricultural products, sooner or later, cannabis will commoditize. Under our joint venture agreement, Village Farms is not only contributing to physical greenhouse facility, but the operational infrastructure, including the know-how, experience, and trained labor that enabled us to become one of the largest low-cost greenhouse growers of premium produce in Canada and the United States. It is why we are confident that Pure Sun Farms can be the low-cost producer of high-quality cannabis producer in Canada with a conservative target of $1 or less per gram at full production. To conclude, our diversification into cannabis production through our Pure Sun Farms joint venture is transformational for our company and will drive significant value for our shareholders. The conversion of this first 1.1 million square foot greenhouse is progressing ahead of the original schedule, and we are encouraged by our advancement with the application process for our cultivation license. With that, I'd like to open up the call to any questions anyone may have.
Thank you. In order to ask a question, please press star and the number 1 on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star and the number 1 on your telephone keypad.
Okay, operator, I think we're good.
Thank you. Your first question comes from the line of Valhan Aljamani from Beacon Securities. Your line is open.
Good morning, gentlemen. Good quarter, and good to see the progression of the conversion for the JV. Quick question on the existing produce business. Looked at the margins and the EBITDA actually increasing year over year this quarter. Is there anything sort of unique or one time in either this quarter or the prior quarter, or can we sort of knock on wood hope that the that business is sort of turning the corner?
Vahan, this is Steve. There's nothing unique to the quarter. Again, we continue to focus on managing our costs. The market is what the market is, and we continue to be focused on managing our cost of production on a day in and day out basis. We do focus and continue to try to improve our market share with respect to our exclusive varieties, which have a higher margin than the commoditized tomatoes that, again, they're commoditized because everybody grows in the TOV and the beefsteak. So we continue to, and that's why we're excited about the launch of things like Lorabella. That's an exclusive variety that's well-received by retailers who are willing to pay us a higher margin for that product than the other ones.
Okay. And just looking forward here, I understand that when you convert the first 1.1 million square foot greenhouse Delta 3, you plan on having essentially a majority of your revenue coming from cannabis. Will you still plan on reporting your financials in the U.S. dollar, or will you consider kind of converting it if most of the revenue and EBITDA starts coming from Canada or cannabis?
Well, it's an interesting question that we've discussed with PwC because essentially our common currency, technically this is a joint venture, so it's a one-line item in our financials, although mathematically you're correct. The cannabis revenues, even our share of them, will essentially, our common currency would be, if we consolidated it, Canadian dollars. So either we'll report in Canadian dollars, or we're just going to have to do as we've, and press releases, have to convert everything to Canadian dollars.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right, Vaughn. Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Russell Stanley from Echelon. Your line is open.
Good morning, guys.
Good morning, Russell.
Just a couple of questions, just to follow up on the incumbent business. I'm just wondering, to the extent you can say, do you get any feedback from your existing customers on that business, on that, from that front, on your decision to get into the cannabis space?
Well, that's an interesting question. We did talk to a number of our marquee customers as we were going through the process. In Canada, it was very favorable, obviously, and in the U.S., for the most, it was favorable. We only really had one customer that just wanted to know more about it, and they were fine with it. I mean, so, you know, as we've said clearly, we're not entering the U.S. space under any circumstances till and wish, if and when it's federally legal. But I think there are many states moving in that direction. So it was a concern, just as a prudent concern, but in the end, no, it was accepted by all our customers. We have not lost one customer over that.
Excellent. That's good to hear. And I apologize for the background noise. Just have a couple more quick questions. With
sure.
respect to the physical conversion of Delta 3, what are the key remaining milestones there just on the physical conversion?
Well, everything, you know, we, as we said, we separated into quadrants, but let me be clear that there is a parallel to all four quadrants. It's not like we're doing one solely and then going to start the second 250,000 square feet. We're getting, one has the priority to get up and running as quick as possible, but each phase is will be in work by, say, February. However, our goal on the first phase is to be fully converted by February. Everything has been ordered, and we're well underway now moving forward with the conversion. So we don't foresee at this point, there's nothing on the horizon that indicates that we'll have any issues.
Excellent. And just on you know, skipping ahead to actual cultivation, have you made decisions yet on what your initial strain selection will be?
I'm sorry, say again?
I was asking about strain selection and what progress you may have made on that front.
I can't. I'm sorry, Russell. I couldn't hear that. It's like a beep in the background.
My apologies. There's a moving vehicle. I was just, my last question was around strain selection and what progress you may have made on that front at this point.
Well, I mean, that was really a key driver besides for doing a joint venture. So with Emerald, we're in those discussions now, and there's a key differentiation between our medical requirements as well, the medicinal side, as well as the strains for the recreational side. And, you know, rather than elaborate on the phone, but I can't say that that's those discussions and selection process is well underway.
Excellent. Thanks for the color. And again, I apologize for the background noise.
Your next question comes from the line of Blake Pelham from Raymond James. Your line is open.
Oh, good morning, Mike and Steve. So the first question is the news release by Emerald this morning, is that completion of another step in the process?
I think it's a parallel step in the process. You know, again, we're front and center on the application process, and I believe, you know, they just wanted to add some confirmation and color to it. So as well, I made a quote in that release, and that we're pleased with the process moving forward. So,
okay. Second, if the joint venture was to move ahead with Delta 2 and Delta 1, would that require additional licensing requirements or a new license, or what would the process be there?
Well, for Delta 2 and 1, it would be then sort of a second step license again, just like Delta 3, but Delta 2 and 1 would be one process, not two separate processes. Because remember, the licenses by Health Canada are based on your address. So being that Delta 3 is directly across the street from Delta 2 and 1, which have the same, Delta 2 and 1 have the same address and Delta 3 separate by numbers, you know, the formalities that you'd have to apply for a third or fourth site license.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Okay.
Your next question comes from the line of Mike Bocott from TD. Your line is open.
Hi there, Michael. Nice report today. This is actually Jeff Kidder in Mike's office with Mike and Chris. I want to understand a little bit about the application process for your license. Are you asking for a license that will allow you to produce something like 12,000 or 20,000 kilograms with this first conversion? Is that a number that's reasonable?
Yes, it's actually 18,300 pounds kilograms.
Okay.
For that first 250. So we separated in basically four quadrants, each 18,000 and change per quadrant.
Okay. And is that to cultivate only, or is that to cultivate and sell?
First, it'll be cultivate, and then sell. You know, the licenses are sort of three-phase with the initial cultivation, then the production, and then the selling license.
Right, and I've seen other companies say they've got a big harvest waiting for their license to sell, so I guess they're sort of, it is a sort of a one, two, three step, right? And what about your future sort of sales practices, you know, between you and Emerald Health? Maybe you can enlighten us on what you would see in terms of how that 18,000 kilogram gets sold, if it gets sold just directly to them as dried bud. And you also say in one of your reports about, you know, being able to cultivate and sell higher-end product yourself. So have you looked at, you know, extraction equipment for oils and the personnel, or are you deferring that to Emerald?
No, I mean, that's all in the process right now. So the flexibility we have is that, you know, Pure Sun Farms can be a vertically integrated provider all the way downstream, whether, you know, if it goes retail in a specific province, we can brand our products, we can sell wholesale initially, of course, Emerald's requirements. So we have total flexibility, and thus nothing is firm at this point in how we do it, but ultimately, you know, we believe that, like many, like oils and creams will be the larger part of the market, or even additives in consumer products. So the extraction will come on board, and that'll be part of the process. But with the demand still outpacing the supply, we have a lot of flexibility in the gear up, and we're staying very tuned to what the legislation is going to be on the downstream, on the retail side. So a lot of those decisions will be forthcoming. But, you know, out of the gate, with the wholesale prices today, we're still in a very favorable position in providing even other cannabis competitors as well.
So will Pure Sun's have its own sort of distribution website and set up, you know, like your competitors do with regards to their medical marijuana already? Or is that going to be a separate sort of digital entity out there? Or will it go through Emerald? Like, what do you see there when you actually start selling $8 per gram sort of stuff?
Clearly on the medical side, that'll be Emerald's conduit. That's sort of part of our agreement coming together. When you really look at the capability of Emerald to us, you know, it was a big decision in choosing them as a partner with the direction they're going, the talent they have, and the depth of it. So we're very excited to work with them. And on the medicinal side, that conduit will be going through them. They're working on a number of different therapies and cures and so on. However, on the recreational side, that'll be Pure Sun Farms. That conduit we'll be building ourselves directly and looking at the sale on the recreational side through Pure Sun Farms.
So, I think like your own entity as a website, right?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay. All right. Thanks very much. That was a great question to answer. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Michael Potter from Monarch Capital Group. Your line is open.
Hey, guys. Congratulations on a solid quarter, and obviously getting a lot of progress being made. I have a quick question on what you guys had written here as far as you anticipate having the cannabis production down to about $1 per gram on a production cost.
Yes.
And I'm assuming that 75,000 kilograms of production by 2020?
Yes.
Is it? Okay. Is that for medicinal, or is that for recreational, or a combination of the two?
Well, it's a combination of the two based on strains that we've looked at with Emerald. So if someone approached Pure Sun Farms to grow a specific strain, say a competitor or somebody in a medicinal, and that was a product we wanted to grow and the pricing was right, we would definitely entertain doing that. So I don't know if their specific exclusive strain, that yield would maybe be different, then, you know, of course, the cost of production would be different. But in general, of the strains we're looking at with Emerald and the recreational strains, we're very confident at that dollar a pound and under. And by the way, that includes appreciation. When we look at our cost of sales, we always include depreciation. We notice many don't. And in fact, when we look at some of our competitors on the same size, they're reporting yields sort of out of the, you know, day one of 25% higher than that 75. So we are, you know, fairly confident we're going to get above the 75, but we want to give ourselves the time to ramp up the production, which could take one or two crop cycles, one or two years to get north of 75. But where, you know, things happen, and the way we project our numbers to be more conservative, we just lower the overall yield. That's why we've made the comments that we think ultimately we can be better, or it's a conservative yield.
And where's the wholesale price for cannabis in Canada currently?
Well, I think, you know, it's anywhere from $5 to $6. I mean, there's been some reports very recent that, you know, it's projected to be as low as $4 in the coming year. So, I mean, I can't say for sure right now. I mean, it really, I guess it's more importantly is where is it going to be in 2020? You know, when all the capacity that's talked about by competitors ramps up, will that actually happen? Will it not happen? So, you know, but again, from day one, we've looked at a $4 per gram price where we modeled our numbers initially, but on a sustainable basis, we took $2 per gram.
Got it.
And that was not based on 100% output, but 50% output of that quality. The extraction grade we budgeted, did our budgets at $1. Now, that's longer term, and clearly we don't want to be there shorter term, but we know we have a viable business at those numbers going forward. And that's, in fact, why, you know, when we talk about hammering cost of production on our produce side, I mean, it's the key. It's a prudent thing in agriculture. You got to continue to hammer your cost of production so you're well ahead of any commoditization that may occur.
Okay.
That's how we see it.
One other question, Mike, to the core of our business. The facilities in Texas our focus right now obviously is to ramp up the cannabis production as quickly as we possibly can and go through the permitting process. I know, up until about a year ago, we were still debating whether or not to rebuild our facilities in Texas that were destroyed by the hailstorm several years back. Where does that currently stand?
Well, we did. We did rebuild. Of the 80 acres that were destroyed, that was back in 2012, we rebuilt 60 acres of that. So
right.
The majority is up. And all the infrastructure surrounding the following 20s is built. We just have to physically put the structure up. So, we look at those assets as a tremendous potential going forward. Again, we're not going into the U.S., unless it's very legal. However, if it is, and, you know, people have often said, would you spin off those assets? The answer is absolutely not, because at the multiples we look at those assets today, growing vegetables versus cannabis, if and when it should become legal, it's a huge differential. We, without a doubt, are in the greatest growing area in all of continental United States, bar none. We're at 5,000-foot elevation in the southernmost latitude at the highest elevation in the U.S., It's great for any crop, including cannabis. We have over 5 million square feet of high-tech facilities there. One of the facilities that's one of the most advanced greenhouses ever built in the world. So, either way, we believe in our produce business as well. And, you know, people have often asked, well, losing the 10% of the assets you have or Delta 3, keep in mind, again, the three Delta facilities produce more than enough tomatoes for the per capita consumption of the entire province of British Columbia, and 80% of it is still exported to the U.S. due to many Mexican tomatoes coming into Canada. So ultimately, we will look at, we're looking at acquisition on the produce side, consolidation is required, but we will be looking in the future of new facilities in the marketplace in the U.S. Going forward. So it really is a tremendous, we have a tremendous flexibility on the direction we can go in the next few years in the U.S.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Your next question comes from the line of Francisco Pellegrino from CDOT Company. Your line is open.
Good morning, guys.
Morning.
So I had wanted to ask you about that 2020 goal of 75,000 kilograms at an average cost of $1 per gram. What are production volumes? I guess, how do we bridge me to that 75,000 kilograms? What's production for 2018 and 2019 looking like volume-wise? And then what would be the associated per gram production costs for those yields?
Francisco, you know, our current model for 2018, assuming we get a license and we're selling by July 1st, we're projecting to sell 7,000 to 8,000 kilograms in the 6 months ended in that 250,000 first quadrant. Because of the phased approach of 2019, we're projecting sales of roughly 35,000 to 40,000 kilograms in 2019, with in 20, as we've already said, 75,000 kilograms. Obviously, the quarterly per gram cost will come down. It's a volume business. As we say, a lot of farming is a fixed cost business. So as you ramp up your in this case, kilograms, we're used to talking in pounds as tomato growers, but in kilograms in this instance, we'll ramp that down. So, you know, we're starting in the midway between $1 and $2 in 2018. And by the end of 2019, we're below the dollar.
Okay. I was just trying to assess where the operating leverage was going to come as that tiered incremental production comes online. And
really,
then I guess,
it kicks in 2019.
Yep. And then I guess when I just looked through some of your presentations, you guys are saying by 2020 you'll have an average production cost of $1 per gram, but the industry is going to have a production cost of $2.25 per gram. Could you just help me understand the difference or maybe bridge your competitive advantages as a grower or a hydroponic business that allows you to have this competitive advantage from the cost side?
Well, I think the 225 was industry numbers we had seen. So we didn't put that out saying they were going to be that and we were this. We just always from day one said that we, in all our models, and let's just say when we ramp up in full production, the critical mass is there. So if you take our grower team, if you're growing 18,000 kilos, versus 75, it just drives your cost down. So let's say by the end of 19 is where we're approaching that dollar, and certainly we're there in 2020. The comparison was industry numbers people have talked about. But to answer your question, yeah, I mean, high-tech, you know, high-value crops worldwide are grown in greenhouses, both medium-tech, low-tech, and high-tech. And from Japan, I mean, you could look at the ferocious growth in Russia today, Turkey, the Netherlands, of course, all over. It's been done for 80 years, and it just makes sense to use natural resources as opposed to supplement, you know, what you may need to bring in. So when we look at sort of the indoor model, and putting aside the fact that we believe you can achieve the same quality indoor or out, even if a lesser percent, even if you wanted to take the fact, and I don't buy it, but lesser, you would have less output of high quality from a greenhouse. We're budgeting that at 75,000 when we certainly think we can get to 90 as an example. But putting that aside, I mean, how can you look at an indoor, when I look at an indoor facility, and I've toured many, just the CapEx, requirements each year to maintain those facilities, the requirements on energy and backup redundant energy, especially if you're using 100% supplemental artificial lighting to get your crop out, you need backup, the removing of heat, the HVAC. I mean, it's just a massive cost. And at some point, I don't think the two, you know, I think the drivers in a greenhouse will eventually well outperform indoor growing. So when we do our comparisons, we're not doing it to other companies that have a greenhouse strategy. It is compared more to a sole indoor grower.
Okay, that was helpful. And just one question, my final question on pricing. So given the scenario analysis that you had provided previously, just due to different price points, I think it goes from like $2 per gram up to $8 per gram. Given your competitive advantage in regards to being the low-cost producer, what do supply commitments or supply conversations with potential customers currently look like? For example, would you be willing to forego maybe some profits today if you're willing to lock in a higher price over the long term with customers, given the significant projected supply shortfall that you're forecasting for the industry? Have you had a big customer approach the partnership yet, saying, hey, we're willing to buy X percent of your production at such and such a price over the next couple of years?
No, we have not had those discussions, although we've had some early discussions with a retailer who may look at the space that is already an existing customer. And that's why I said earlier, we're very keen on seeing what the legislation is. Clearly, Ontario is going to go in a certain direction. It's unknown for British Columbia. If it goes retail, then even if we had discussions, we would reserve it until we finally see at least initially what British Columbia is going to do, because there has been an indication by a retailer that they want to be in the retail side of this market. We have an existing relationship that could be favorable to us. But again, I think everything changes when the rec side goes July 1st, and that's just a game changer, just looking at the capacity requirements as opposed to the medicinal side, and I think that's where those conversations will start to happen.
Perfect. Thanks so much, Mike and Steve.
You're welcome. Thanks.
There are no further questions at this time. Mike, I turn the call back over to you.
Okay, I want to thank everybody for your continued interest in Village Farms and Pure Sun Farms. We're very excited as we move forward here and looking forward to our next conversation. Thank you kindly for joining.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.